You're listening to South Florida's Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
This is God's plan for redemption, and it's good news.
Today's broadcast is supported by Plains Dental Arts in Vero Beach and Port St. Lucie. Thanks to Dr. Alex Plain at Plains Dental Arts for keeping New Day with Red Palmer on the air daily at WCNO 89.9 FM.
Hey, it's I, Rhett Palmer. It is I, yes. It's good to be with you and all our listeners on WCNO. We have a man in here who was listening to our broadcast recently and gave me an enthusiastic call, and your name is?
Jim Weir.
Jim Weir. W-E-I-R?
Mm-hmm.
W-E-I-R, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Jim Weir, isn't there some famous buddy, somebody in the music industry named
My cousin, Bob.
Oh, yeah? What does he do?
He plays for the Grateful Dead.
Your cousin?
He refuses to acknowledge me even to this day, though. I was a reprobate.
Well, you know, he and I, even though I didn't really get to meet him, and it wasn't really that aware of the Grateful Dead, but on the grounds of Woodstock, I was there over near the hog farm. The hog farm, you had to go through the woods, and there they had free food. They had microbiotic brown rice. I was 15. And they had a separate little stage for
Max Yasgur's.
Yes. Platform. They had a special little stage just for the Grateful Dead. Mm-hmm. And the Merry Pranksters were there with their multicolored buses.
King Keezy, yes.
And I traveled with them for a while till, of course, we had Kent State, which sent me back home to upstate New York. But great to have you here, Jim. And, so you're I think I saw a documentary about your cousin. Now you're a Christian.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And you had a dramatic experience coming to the Lord. Do you know if he knows the Lord yet, or is that something we should not discuss?
I'm just being facetious about Bob Weir.
Oh, okay.
Yes, he's not really my cousin. If he'd share some money with me, I'd tell people anything about him. I spent 22 years in addiction, in the throes of addiction. 22 years. Started out.
How old are you now?
I'm 73.
You're 73?
Yes, sir.
Well, it's nice to run into somebody older than myself.
Yes. It started
I'm
out
70,
in the
71
60s,
next month.
Late 60s.
Yep.
And just for those of you that are listening, pot is a gateway drug, just so you know.
Yeah.
I want to get that out there because that's what I started with. And then I progressed to heroin and cocaine and crack and alcohol and various and other sundry drugs that, you know, I could ingest or inject or imbibe in some shape, form, or fashion. But it culminated in October of 1992. I'd robbed a bank down in Broward County where I was living under the bridges. And
of course, why'd you rob a bank? Because that's where the money is.
That's
right?
Where the money is. That's what the policeman asked me when they caught up with me. They go, "Why'd you rob the bank?" And I go, "Well, that's where the money is."
Yeah.
And he goes, "Well, you know, you couldn't find another way." I go, "Well, I'm a drug addict. I don't work. You know, so I'm an opportunist." It was the cop just didn't seem to get it. He didn't seem to get it. But you know, that was the end of the beginning, and the beginning of the end for me. I was sentenced to 10 years in prison.
10 years?
Yes, by a judge in Broward County.
Now that's a federal crime to rob a bank?
Yeah,
yes?
But they didn't pick up the charge.
Oh, okay.
And that's a whole other story in itself.
You have to do the whole thing. In case people don't know, you have to do the entire time if it's a fed thing.
Well, it's 85%.
Oh.
It's the same in Florida now. But nevertheless... they didn't want to pick up the charge because of some events that happened while they were chasing me. So they'd rather just stayed where it was with me being in the state system. And they came to court every time I was in court and monitored what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And they made it known to my attorney that if I accepted a sentence of 10 years or more, they wouldn't contest it or fight it or do anything else. So that's the way it worked out.
Did they
out.
Make you one of those... what do you call that when they say, if you'll do this, we'll do that, and, you know, let you off easier? Or
no, they didn't let me off any easier, but the judge
Did you have
I
an
had,
accomplice?
Sir?
Did you have an accomplice?
No, sir. It was just me. I was a solo.
See, if you had somebody else, you could have turned them in.
Well, actually, one of the guys that, that he and I smoked a lot of crack together. He's the one that turned me in. And when the cops showed up, knocked on the door and announced themselves, I looked at him and I go, did you call the cops? And he goes, yeah, there's a reward out for you. I said, okay.
Oh, that my was, word.
Yeah.
So how much did he get?
$1,000.
He turned you in 10 years of your life for $1,000. Well, you know.
But he really, Brett, he did me a huge favor because.
Well, the hands of the Lord.
That's it. This is, you know, God brings them in our life and he takes them out. Wherever he wants them, he puts them. When he doesn't want them there, he removes them. That's what was going on with me, but I didn't see it.
Yeah.
So anyway, move this along here. I hit the Broward County Jail. I'm on the sixth floor.
Now, a jail is a place you go to waiting to be sentenced, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I've been in this jail many times before because I was living in Broward County and I was involved in little petty thefts and just, you're a drug addict, so you're always driving with no license, stuff like that.
Mm.
So anyway, I was praying. I was on my knees, my face on that nasty concrete, just crying out. I mean, tears just pouring down my cheeks.
Now, had you heard about Jesus?
Oh, I'd gone to Jesus in 1968 and laid my soul at his feet, and then I turned around and ran from him for 25 years.
You took yourself off the throne, then put yourself back on the throne.
I went right down in the gutter in the miry clay, and I stayed there from that point, 25 years. But, you know, it just goes to say that
I don't want to interrupt you, though, because you were on your face praying and crying.
Yes, crying out to God that I can't do this anymore. I'm asking you.
You'd reached your bottom?
I'd reached my bottom. Come and help me. And he did. He heard. I mean, things started happening at an unbelievable rate. Within a couple of days, I received a cellmate while I was in jail that was versed in the Bible.
Oh, there you go.
He didn't even need to open it. He could quote. I mean, and it's a young guy, too. I mean, and I look back now, and it took me years after we got separated in the judicial system. It took me so many years to find him that I thought he was actually a figment of my imagination. But I found him, because you can't hide from Google. I found him. And you know, we've reconnected.
Even if you're an angel.
Even if you're an angel. And he was. God sent him to me in my time of need.
Angel.
And he walked with me.
Yeah.
Roughly 120 days in that environment.
Wow.
And what he gave me in 120 days of exposure to the Word was enough to pique my interest and keep me going on the right road after he and I went separate ways. Which, you know, when God brings them in, he may leave them there, he may take them out. Well, this guy he took out. But it was really, you know, from there I went to prison. I had the judge, can't remember his name now.
It doesn't matter.
Oh, it does matter, because he sent more people to the electric chair than any other judge.
Really?
Yes. Than
what state is this, Florida?
Broward County.
Oh.
And his son is also an attorney in Broward County.
Mm.
Went to the University of Florida. I'll think of his name before it's over with.
Yeah.
But the way he dealt with me was atypical of the way the court system works. Normally they run you in there like cattle, handcuffed together, and the judge just goes down and gives you what you're going and they run you out of there. Well, they didn't do that with me. They set us in the jury box, and I was the first one. He called my name and I identified myself, and he goes, "Bailiff, unhandcuff that man and bring him down here in front of me. I want him looking right in my face." So I got down there, and he goes, "Mr. Weir," he goes, "you've been sitting in here like 16 months. Is there some reason for that?" And I told him the underlying circumstances that the judge that I had, you know, was trying to habitualize me. And I said, "I don't have the predicate offenses." I said, "I'm not going to take that." And he goes, "Well, that's not going to happen in my courtroom." He goes, "I'm going to make you a deal. If I can give you a drug program, I will give you a drug program. If I can't, I'm going to send you to prison, but I'm going to cap it at 10 years. He goes, "Are you okay with that?" And then he asked me who my lawyer was, and my lawyer was a guy named Brian Brasted, who was a New York attorney that was in Florida. Very good guy, but all the judges hated him because he was proactive for us,
mm-hmm.
for the prisoners. He goes, well, I don't let him practice in my courtroom. That was the appropriate answer. So anyway, there was another public defender there, and he grabbed him, and he goes, you're going to fill in for Brasted on Mr. Weir here, which he did. They brought me back in 30 days, and he sentenced me, and he kept his word. He goes, I can't put you in a drug program. They don't want nothing to do with you, Mr. Weir. He goes, but I'm going to give you 10 years. He goes,
why wouldn't they accept you in the drug program?
I had like—
Your history?
Yeah. I had like 25
prior incorrigible, felony. They would call you, right?
Yes. Non-redeemable. Yeah. Non-redeemable.
Well, Jesus, but he saw, Jesus likes the non-redeemable.
And this judge saw that. He goes, Mr. Weir, he goes, I don't know what it is with you, because he goes, I've sent a lot of people to the electric chair, but I was moved in my heart to bring you down here and speak to you directly. And he goes, I've made you that promise, and I'm going
to
keep it.
Now, he wouldn't send you to the electric chair for robbing a bank.
Oh, no, 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 no. But he made it very clear that he was, you know, he goes, I don't have any problem.
By the way, just so you know, because it's a Christian station, we don't want to watch our language. Otherwise, we'd have to throw out the whole interview. So
we don't want to do that.
Because you fibbed with me about Weir. I don't know what else you might pull, you know what I mean?
So,
no deception here.
Yeah. So anyway, after I got out of prison, I went to— I had actually tried to get with Dunklin,
yes.
Dunklin Camp.
I love Dunklin.
Yeah, but they never answered me. I was looking for programs, you know.
I mean, so you could have not had to do
the
time?
Well, I had nowhere to go. My
Why
family
they
had disowned
you
me.
At Dunklin? Maybe they thought you were— I don't know if they would think you were incorrigible.
Well, I don't know.
Because who was the founder of that back then?
I think his name's like Mickey something.
Yeah, he's gone now from the earth. But what a man of God, huh?
Absolutely. But anyway,
hold on. I'm going to inject one story here for the listeners and for you.
Uh-huh.
There's a lady that comes in here, Penny Cook. Now, her son was an addict, bad, heroin, cocaine, pot, the whole alcohol. For 13 years, she prayed for him. And he's near death, been to prison, come out, you know, just hopeless. And she wrote a book on prayer. She has a new book out, too, about praying for America. But anyway, Penny Cook. But she would not relent with the Lord, hang on to his coattails, and bothered him just continually. And after 13 years, he woke up on a beach one day and said, I've come to the end of myself, just like you. Ended up going to Dunklin. And when he went from Dunklin, then he ended up going to pre-ministry school in Australia. Met his future wife. He's now married, children, and is a pastor of a church. So prayer is powerful. Who was praying for you?
Well, I had a praying aunt, and I had a praying mother. There were other people in the background I'm not aware of at this point, but I know because I saw some things happen in my family, like with my mom. My mom was diagnosed with lung cancer, and she'd always gone to church, and she'd always taken my brother and I to church. But I saw something happen with her, and at that time, I didn't really realize.
Tune in again tomorrow at 3 a.m., 7 a.m., or 3 p.m. for the continuation of this interview. I'm your host, Rhett Palmer, and this is A New Day.
I am thirsty, I am learning, had a hunger for more of you. You are the water, and you offer life that is made.